translation and commentary by His divine grace. Ace is after the dance from double pad. And we are going to read chapter 12, devotional service, verses 13 and 14. At Vaishya Sarvabhutana, Maitra Karana Echa, Niramo Nirahankara, Samadukha Sukhakshami, Santushta Satatam Yogi, Yatatma Dhridanishchaya, Mayarpita Mano Budhir, Yomad Bhakta Same Priya. Translation. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Lord Vishnu Prabhupada. Coming again to the point of pure devotional service, the Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two persons. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds. So it's better to suffer than to protest. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, it is stated, Tatekam pamsu samikshamanho, bunjana vipata kritam vipaka. Whenever a devotee is in distress or has fallen into difficulty, he thinks that it is the Lord's mercy upon him. And he thinks, thanks to my past misdeeds, I shall suffer far, far greater than I am suffering now. So it is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord that I am not getting all the punishment I am due. I am just getting a little by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, the devotee is always calm, quiet, and patient, despite many distressful conditions. The devotee is also always kind to everyone, even to his enemy. Nirmala means that a devotee does not attach much importance to the pains and trouble pertaining to the body, because he knows perfectly well that he is not the material body. He does not identify with the body. Therefore, he is free from the conception of false ego and is equipoised in happiness and distress. He is tolerant and he is satisfied with whatever comes by the grace of the Supreme Lord. He does not endeavor much to achieve something with great difficulty. Therefore, he is always joyful. He is a completely perfect mystic because he is fixed in the instructions received from the spiritual master. And because his senses are controlled, he is determined. He is not swayed by false ideas because no one can lead him from the fixed determination of devotional service. He is fully conscious that Krishna is the eternal Lord, so no one can disturb him. All these qualifications enable him to fix his mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. Such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare. But a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. Furthermore, the Lord says that such a devotee is very dear to him. For the Lord is always pleased with all his activities in full Krishna consciousness. Advaishta Sarva Bhutana Maitra Karuna Echa Niramamo Niramankara Samaduka Sukhakshami Santushta Satatam Yogi Yatatma Dridanishchaya Mayagrita Mano Budhya Yomad Bhakta Samayya. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Om Gyanjana Swyagyanjana Shalakya Chachanudu Kyanatasmai Shri Guru Vedana Shri Chaitanya Prabhu Vishnu Stakita Vedana
any
substantial terms, any meaningful terms. So, in fact, generally in religion, it tends to be like that, that it's just a question of belief more than anything. And it's very hard really to tell who is on what level. It can be very hard to tell who is on what level. And even what level you are on yourself. And what you need to do. But basically you just believe in things, certain things. And you hope for the best. Sometimes when Srila Prabhupada was asked, what do you believe in Krishna consciousness? What do you believe in? Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would answer that we do not believe in anything. But we know that Krishna is God. We know that the process of devotional service is the process to approach Him, because we see that we are approaching Him. As we practice, we're coming closer, and that the different symptoms, characteristics of devotee are gradually developing more and more. So like this Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say, because we meet people, when we are preaching to the general public, we meet people very regularly, and they ask us, what are your beliefs? What do you believe? And so sometimes he would answer like that. So here, this is the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It is the end of the second section of Bhagavad Gita. Second section of Bhagavad Gita is from chapter 7, beginning of chapter 7 to the end of this 12th chapter. And here at the end of the section is dealing with devotional service. If you are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, you would know that at the end of the 6th chapter, in the second to last verse, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that a yogi is better than a fruitive worker. Fruitive worker means ordinary materialistic person who is just working, doing something in material life to get some money, to acquire things, to enjoy or to maintain himself like this. This is a fruit of work. So Krishna says, the yogi is better than the fruit of work. He says he is better than the ascetic. Ascetic means the renunciate, who's trying to give up this world to achieve a higher goal. Now, of course, in our experience of life, we need plenty of fruitive workers, don't we? We need so many. In fact, it is about 99.9999 and a few more times, perhaps, % of the population. It's really like that. And ascetics, well, we don't need so many renunciates, do we? People who have voluntarily given up material things, given up their money, and living just somehow by the grace of God, making no endeavor to get money or get anything. But they're also not really devotees. They're sort of in a neutral position, not doing anything. So, ascetics, they're in an extreme minority these days. In fact, I don't know if we really meet any. Occasionally, some people become ascetics by force, means they get robbed or they go bankrupt and they end up in the street. That's a pretty austere life. But someone who voluntarily gives up, such a person is very rare. And then Krishna also mentions the empiric philosophers, the mental speculators. We also know that many of them, although they do get a few, they have some interest in religion and life and different ideas on these subjects. They cannot settle on one, but they become conversant with many. And in this way they can speculate in this way or in that way and sort of discuss any philosophical topic. So they may appear to be quite knowledgeable, but there is no real point. They just know a lot about many things, but they are not really surrendered or accepted anything very deeply. As they say, Jack of all trades, master of none. He knows all about Christianity, all about Islam, all about Hinduism and Durga and Shiva and you name it, Hanuman and meditation and yoga and sacrifice. But they're just ideas. It's just a mental thing. It has not come to that point of crystallizing and then focusing his life on that and realizing, coming to the conclusion or the point. It's just a mental exercise. So this is empiric philosophy. So anyway, in that verse, Lord Krishna says that the yogi is better than these three types, fruit of workers, the ascetics, the monks, and the mental speculators or philosophical types, non-denoting philosophical types. That the yogi is the best. Then in the next verse, Lord Krishna says, famous verse 647, yogina bhavi sarvesha mārgate nantarāvana śrāvā gāyate yoga sāpeyam kata-māvata-hā. It was very famous verse. Krishna then says, out of all the yogis are better than the other people in general, but amongst all the different types of yogis, the one who is always serving me with great and transcendental faith and always remembering me in devotion. Krishna says, of all the different types of yogis, this one is the best. That was the end of the 6th chapter. And then from the beginning of chapter 7 to the end of 12, where we are now, Lord Krishna discusses about bhakti yoga, about devotional service, Krishna consciousness, in detail. And this is the end of that discussion. Krishna is summing up the discussion of devotional service by pointing out, making it clear that as a devotee, if you are trying really to be a devotee, then it will be visible. If you are really becoming a devotee, you know, if you're not really becoming a devotee, really as heart, you're not really changing your life. Then, you know, it's just like a social thing to show off. To show off. Sometimes it happens. No, God, that was best. Different reasons why people become involved in Krishna consciousness. God had said, sometimes you get a young man, he wants to find a nice, chaste young girl who will be very subservient, very obedient, you know, an angel. she'll just clean up after him and never talk back.
Thank you.
we have systems, and if we become conversant enough with things, then we'll be able to recognize things. You know, like the serious devotee, more serious devotee, there's a little story we heard the other day, and I cannot remember if I told you the little story here yet. Perhaps I didn't. But it's a story about the man who had an appointment and he was looking for a parking place. You know that story?
I don't know that. I'm
sure. Right, anyway, there was a man. He was driving around Phoenix. And then here, this is the shopping area, trying to get a parking place. And because he had an important appointment, he had to be there somewhere in the center at a certain time. Otherwise, he would miss out on something. Whatever it may be. So he's got to find a parking place. He's a devotee. You know, give or take. That is like a devotee to some degree. Looking for a parking place and then finding one, looking at his watch. Oops, well, I'm almost late, got to find the parking place. I'll miss my appointment, then I'll miss out. So, what to do? He decided, I'll pray to Krishna. So he prayed, Krishna, please give me a parking place. No parking. Say, Krishna, I'll chant my prayers every day. Every day. Just give me a parking. No parking. Krishna, I will follow every Ekadasi. Not when the devotees are not looking, I'll duck in for a, you know, something else. Behind the scenes, by each other. Not so much for the cancer. No, I'll follow a cancer. Just give me a parking place, please, Krishna. No parking place. Let me pray, Krishna, please give me a parking place. I will only read Prabhupada's books. No.
You're not pure devotee. It means you're in a mixed condition.
need guidance in terms of your mixture. You know, if someone is attached to sleeping in a lot, then what will be needed to help them will be different, like a different program to the type of program which will be needed by a person who is just too much into going to the gym and exercising. You know, of course, generally most of us need more exercise than we get. But some people are just too much into it. And they, you know, they end up looking like, what's his name, the governor of California? Albert Schwarzenegger used to look, you know, now he's 60 years old or something. You know, the big sort of muscle bound. It can look very gross and unpleasant. So, if someone is very interested in sleeping and they're lazy, then what will be needed to help them progress will be different from what will be needed by someone, you know, who's not got time to chant their rounds because they have to go to the gym. And the sort of person who asks you, is it okay to chant my rounds while I'm jogging around the block? Or while I'm on the treadmill? Because it may be okay to chant your rounds when you're on the treadmill. But some people get too much into this bodily consciousness. So like this, Krishna consciousness is a scientific process. And all of us, each one of us, we have our own particular type of situation. We're all individuals. And how each one of us may progress, when you get into the details of it, it will tend to be somewhat different. Even though, of course, some things will be the same, we should all chant 16 rounds, we should all follow the regular principles. But when you get more into the details, the finer points, then you'll see that there'll be differences. Yeah. So here, Lord Krishna is talking about some of those good qualities here in these two verses, and then on for several verses to verse 20, where, and through all these verses, Krishna is describing different personal qualities, personal attributes and characteristics of a devotee. Here we read, what was the first one, do you remember? What was the first one? And then at the end of each verse, Krishna says, this type of devotee is very dear to me. So if we develop these qualities like, number one, not envious, but rather a kind friend to all living beings, Krishna says, such a devotee who is like that, is very dear to me. And this is Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, in the lecture on these two verses, Srila Prabhupada read the verses in the third one, then the first thing he said, you can look actually if you have Prabhupada's books on your computer. You look up and the lectures, find these two verses. Chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, you see, Prabhupada begins the lecture by saying, yes, this is Krishna consciousness. How would Krishna love me? How foolish must love be? In other words, how can I become the type of person who Krishna will notice? Oh, there he is. Out of the crowd. Oh, there he is. Ah, like this. And he feels happy to recognize. One devotee told us the story. He was in Los Angeles and Prabhupada was giving class. And he wanted, it was like he wanted recognition from Srila Prabhupada. He wanted Prabhupada to greet him and acknowledge him. So he was sitting there in the class and he knew after the class Prabhupada walks out of the temple room, and he normally follows more or less a certain path. So he sat right on that path. And his idea was, Prabhupada will now walk past, I will, and Prabhupada will step off the Vyasa's and I'll be standing there. And as Prabhupada walks by, I will say, Hare Krishna, Jai Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada will say, Hare Krishna, something to me. This was his strategy, strategic thinking in Krishna consciousness. So sure enough, Prabhupada finished the class, got off the Vyasa stand, and started walking more or less down in the usual direction. He had almost reached that devotee who was already and just before he reached that devotee, Prabhupada suddenly stopped and said, where is Jayananda? I think many of you have heard of Jayananda. Yeah? Very great devotee. Unfortunately, he passed away many years ago before Prabhupada left this world. So Prabhupada stopped and said, where is Jayananda? And someone said, he is in the kitchen, Srila Prabhupada. There was a door into the kitchen directly from the temple room. Prabhupada just, here's the devotee already. Prabhupada just turned around and walked straight into the kitchen. And sure enough, there was Jayananda. And Prabhupada just walked up to him and started talking. And they had a very nice, affectionate exchange for a few minutes. And then Prabhupada walked out. And when he walked out, he missed that devotee. So the devotee understood, we cannot just contrive how to get the mercy. Jayananda, he was so dedicated and so devoted to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was just attracted. The other devotee, he was going to, not exactly perhaps put on an act, but it was kind of artificial, just very formal. But Prabhupada was attracted. He wanted the association of Jayananda. So that devotee wrote about it. It's, I forget exactly where it is, but it's in one of these books, Different Recollections of Experiences with Srila Prabhupada. And he understood, this is how to get the mercy. You have to be in that mood of surrender and service as a devotee, as a real devotee from the heart, not just in an official sense. Yeah, and then, as Prabhupada said, we mentioned, this is Krishna consciousness. How can Krishna love me? Normally we think, how will I love Krishna? But the thing is, it is not, or it should not be, so difficult to love Krishna, because he is very lovable. sane or reasonable person, it should not be so difficult to become attracted to Krishna and develop some feelings for Krishna, because he is just such an amazing person. But us, for us to really be loved, you know, in material life there is the phenomenon called love, but it tends to be more lust. That you look good to me, looks like I can get a lot of pleasure from you. And to you, it looks like you can get a lot of pleasure from me. And we come together, and we call it love. But basically the idea, at least on the material platform, is what is in it for me? What pleasure will I get? It is not so much love. Love, we know, means that selfless desire to please, to do anything, a willingness to do anything for the beloved, if it pleases the beloved. This is love, not just what can I get out of you, and if I find someone who I can get more out of than you, then I will just dump you and go for that person, and who cares about you? And this is not love. How can this be love? This is craziness, actually, to call them. So how will Krishna love me? How can I become such a person that Krishna will want my company? Krishna will want to be kind to me, to give me his mercy. So we have to develop these qualities. This is the point. Like Jayananda, he was so devoted to Prabhupada that even though Prabhupada couldn't see him, he could see so many devotees. Big temple and it was full. He could see so many devotees he could have spoken to. But then he stopped up. Where is Jayananda? He's in the kitchen, and Prabhupada went straight in and found him. So, the question, will we make our way back to Godhead? Or will Krishna come and take us back to Godhead? By his mercy, if we become such a person that Krishna develops real feelings for, and real mercy towards, so we have to develop these qualities, like Jayananda. Jayananda is an interesting story. It illustrates, well, I guess it illustrates how Krishna is very merciful to devotees like Jayananda, even in very unusual ways, even like very unexpectedly. Listen to this. This is an interesting story. It was in San Francisco, he was temple president. And there was one devotee who was doing a weekly preaching program in the prison, some prison, going and having like another hutta with the prisoners in the jail. So this program was going on every week. And one time, that devotee, the preacher from that program, he came and told Jayananda, the temple president, he said, you know, I've got a whole group of prisoners. They're all chanting. I've given them books. They're reading the books. They're really nice. What I would like to do is give them prasadam next week. So Jayananda was an amazing cook. He asked him, can you please make some special halava? Special halava. And special laddu. And bring it to to the prelate and will give it to the prisoners, and this will just really inspire them and excite them. So Jairus says, yeah, right, sure, we'll do that. That's a great idea. So sure enough, on the day, they caught big after one. It was like one of these super duper ovens with strawberries in it, too much butter, and you know what I mean? It was just like a knockout. You know what Prabhupada said? Prabhupada said, when you eat halva, at the end, your fingers should be greasy with butter. This is what Prabhupada said. This means it was a good halva. So he made a real super duper halva. It was just really amazing. Then he made some laddu. And you know, laddu, actually I've never made it myself, but he made some special laddu. And off they went to the prison, like a band of about several devotees in it. So they drive to prison. One of the devotees said to Jayananda, he said, you know, Jayananda Guru, I think we should test the halva. Taste it. See if it's okay. Jayananda said, yes, you're right. Let everyone have some halva. So they served out generous, devotee-sized helping. Everyone got their halva in the pan. Several of them. They ate the halva. As they were eating, they were making all sorts of appreciative noises. They finished the halva and they said, wow, that's really good halva. Fantastic. And then the guy said, you know, that halva. And they had some money also. So again, everyone got another generous helping of halal, which they polished off one way. And then another time he said, you know, that halal is so amazing. Could I have a little more? So, now you can probably imagine, right? By the time they reached the prison, there was no halva left or laddu. And Jayananda looked around and said, okay, where's the halva? Pot was empty. They thought, oh my lord, what are we going to do? What will the devotee, the preacher, what will he say? We made the halva at his request. And we get the whole lot. Oh my God. Anyway, they came to the entrance of the prison. And the guard was there. Searched the van. So the guard came to the back of the van. He saw, oh, one of these pots. What's in them? And the devotee said, God, oh, they're empty. And the guard said, that's good. Because we don't allow any food in the prison from outside. No food. So the devotees breathed a sigh of relief. It was Krishna's arrangement. So then they went in and they met the devotee. And the devotee said, okay, where's the prasad? And they said, you wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't let us bring any prasad. So Krishna protected them in a very sort of unusual way, kind of roundabout way. So this quality, all these qualities are very important, but Krishna has listed this one out first. also in the 16th chapter, Krishna lists out another whole list of qualities which he says are divine qualities. And wrong list of qualities. Anyway, there's another list, and I would have to locate it, where Krishna lists out many qualities which are very important for the devotees. And the first is unmarred dwelling, a dumbed dwelling, always very humble and not an enemy to anyone. So these are very important qualities, to not be envious, to be a kind friend of all living entities. That is there in the pure devotee. Pure devotee is always kind to every living entity. Not just those who like him, but the others he won't talk to. No, every living entity, even Prabhupada says here, a devotee never becomes the enemy of his enemy. But he remains the well-wisher, even of his enemy. There's an interesting example given, perhaps we've mentioned it here before, that Mother Yashoda, when Krishna goes out herding the cows, Mother Yashoda feels so much separation. Krishna will be away the whole day, so her heart is yearning, and she never forgets Krishna, but still, she carries on with her duties, cleaning up and so on and so forth. And as Mother Yashoda is moving around the house, what does she see? She sees a pair of shoes of Krishna. She's cleaning up here and there. Here's a pair of Krishna's shoes. And when she sees Krishna's shoes, they remind her of Krishna. Not that she forgot about them. You know, she forgot. And then she remembers, oh, Krishna, oh yes. Not like that, like may happen with us sometimes. She's always remembering Krishna. But when she sees the shoes, and she recognizes, oh, these are Krishna's shoes, then there is a flood of remembrance. Amazing flood of remembrance of Krishna. And everything becomes very deep and very intense. Even more so than usual. Very much deeper by seeing the shoes. And she may pick up the shoes and hold them to her heart and cry tears of ecstasy. These are my Krishna's shoes. So why does she like those shoes? It is because they are Krishna's shoes. It is not just she has some sort of thing about shoes. She is a shoes fan. I traveled back from Cape Town yesterday on Kulula. And they used to address us, you know, even not maybe two or three times, a few times. They used to call us passengers, superheroes. Now we are Kulula fans. a superhero. Neither am I really a communal man. It's just talk. So she is not a shoes fan. Whenever she sees shoes, she has to inquire, what make? And, you know, like some people are computer fans. What's the computer? Oh, what sort of processor? How big is the hard drive?
Some big
this is the tree. Prophet came back, this is the tree, but one of the big branches is gone. And Elkanah got so upset. Why did you cut that branch off the tree? And the Lord said, well, we had to expand the temple room and so on. Preaching is developing, and more people are coming. But Prabhupada up there was still very upset. Why did you do that? Even those of you who meet to Vrindavan, you know there's a tamal tree in the courtyard on the right hand side. Now the one that's there is like, I think it's a cutting from the original one which passed away. But before it passed away, they cut a branch off and planted it there, and it grew. And now it's also quite a substantial tree. So when they were designing that temple, the architect, devoted architect, Sarabi, he showed them about the picture. Interior. Big courtyard. There the deity is just above the courtyard. But no tree. Prabhupada said, oh, very nice things, the deities, and plenty of room for kirtan, and all these things. Prabhupada said, where's the tree? And again, the Lord said, well, trees and buildings. The prophet said, no. You build around the tree. And they did it. And the tree or its descendant or whatever is still there. More than 30 years later. Or those of you who have been to Bombay, you may have noticed by the entrance as you turn it on the main road, this big entranceway, two lanes. And fairly close to the actual entrance is a tree in the middle of the road, of our road, the driveway, big driveway. And our driveway, two lanes, it goes around the tree. I don't know if any of you noticed that. So when they were building the Bombay temple, same thing happened. Some devotees were designing it, actually the same Sarabi. And, you know, they had to have a driveway, and it had to be approved by the city authorities. So they designed the driveway, got the stamp of approval, and they showed Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked at the plan, the site plan, and then he looked and said, but where's the tree? And again, the Lord said, well, we have to build the driveway. It's in the way. And the city authorities said, it has to be done. And we'll have to cut down the tree. And Rabbi said, no. Then you must go and tell the city authorities, it is against our religion to cut down trees. And the devotee can still try to say, well, not sure, Prabhupada, I don't think they'll listen, and you know, they have their requirements, but Prabhupada is not interested in all the excuses. So anyway, we went back to the city authorities and told them that we made a mistake. It is against our religion to cut down trees. There's a big tree here. So we're going to make the driveway go around. And it was a little difficult. They had to negotiate. But the tree is still there. You know, that was like 1975. Now it's 2008. 32 or 3 years later, the tree is still there. And next time you go to Bombay, to Jubilee, have a look. I should have known that. So this is Srila Prabhupada. And this is the devotee. This is the pure devotee. Very, very advanced devotee. Real feeling for other living beings. Real interest. You know, I was thinking, at the beginning we mentioned ascetics. We referred to the end of the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says the yogi is better than the fruited workers or the ascetics, the renunciates. And there's one story I was thinking of someone who became an ascetic, a rich person, and he gave up everything and voluntarily accepted a life of poverty. But he was also a devotee. In fact, he gave up everything because he was a devotee, not just because he wanted to renounce things, just sort of got tired of having to count so much money. But he became a devotee, therefore he gave up everything. And this devotee is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. It's in, I think, chapter 18. Or 17, when the list of the qualities, the characteristics of the devotees of malevolent bhava is given. There's a list of 9 qualities, characteristics of the devotee of malevolent bhava. So one of them is very meek and humble. So anyway, this particular person, his name was Lal Babu. Prabhupada talks about him there. He was a very wealthy businessman in Calcutta. He was a landlord. He owned flats and things and he would rent them out. But he was one of these ruthless ones. Take a deposit. You know, take a 1 month or 3 month deposit, whatever it is. And then if you are late by one day in paying your rent, then he kicks you out. He gets the mafia to kick you out. And you forfeit your deposit. This is really like a cutthroat way of making lots of money. And he did it. This was his practice. How to kick the people out and keep the deposit. And in this way, you know, boost your income. And in doing that, actually, he offended so many people. And just, you know, deeply hurt so many people. But he didn't care. He was like that. So anyway, somehow, eventually, he had some, like, major thing happen in his life, and he just gave up everything and became a devotee. Somehow, I don't actually know what it was which caused him to change, but he just did a total about face. And so now he's living as, just literally living in the street. He gave away all his money. He built a temple in Vrindavan, it's still there, beautiful temple. The Malabhu temple. Very nice temple. But he gave up everything. And he was literally living in the street. With a couple of pieces of cloth and a chadar. And that was it. So he thought, when he initially started all this, when he initially became a devotee, he thought, I offended so many people. I need to do some penance, pay some price, not just walk away and go to Vrindavan and, you know, live a nice life there amongst purpose to break his false ego. He accepted a particular program. What he did, he would go to all people that he could remember, at least, who he had cheated and ripped off and hurt like that. All the people he could remember, he made up his program was to visit them as a renunciate. He would knock on the door, and that person would come to the door. And Lao Abu would say, I am Lao Abu. I am the person who cheated you before. And I have come to beg forgiveness and offer my humble obeisances like that. And then even in some cases he would ask them to give a donation. You know, many of them would just laugh at him and tell him, you get out. Anyway, there was one other very ruthless businessman, but Lao Babu had out-ruthless him. He had done him down, even though that guy was like a big cheater master. But Lao Babu was better than cheating. And so he ripped him off. Pride. So he went to his house and he knocked on the door. So that man came to the door and Lao Babu said, you remember me? I'm Lao Babu. And there he is dressed as like a mother chief, basically, with white cloth, just like a loin cloth. Very simple. And so this man, he was speechless. Lao Babu said, yes, I've given up everything as we come into the tea. And I apologize. You should have done what I said. We'll finish in just 1 minute. Just hold on for 8 minutes. So anyway, Lao Babu apologized for his obeisances. Then he said, I know I cheated you, but now I've renounced everything, I've become a devotee. Would you please give a donation? The man was speechless, like double speechless. Now he wants a donation from him. What is this? And you know, he was, like we said, he was really ruthless, penny pincher. He would never give donations for anything, even to save his children's lives. He wouldn't. We had a treasurer in our temple in London. He was ruthless. If anyone came asking for money, for anything, you know, I need some toothpaste. He would say, no. And if anyone came and said, you know, such and such does need something, please give me a little money. He would say, who's he? One devotee came once and said, Krishna needs the deity. Krishna needs such and such something. Please give some money. The treasurer said, who's Krishna? But anyway, Lao Babu, so this man, the other man, he would never give a donation. But here's Lao Babu asking him. So they said, okay, I'll give you a donation. He went back, he went into the kitchen. They had a wood fire stove. And in the wood fire stove, there was ashes. It hadn't been cleaned out yet. So he took a bucket and just filled one with ashes. And he went out to there's Lao Babu standing on the steps. And he said, okay, yeah, I've got a donation for you. Picked up the bucket of ashes and just poured it over the head of Lao Babu. back into the nation. Love alone did not give untimed or make some sarcastic remark or whatever. Love alone said, thank you very much. At least you have started to give something. So this is non-happiness and a kind friend to everyone. So again, to summarize, we have to try and cultivate these qualities. If we do, if we actually develop these qualities, maybe not all of them, but at least some, Krishna will become attractive. I want his association. And then our lives become perfect. When we get recognized by Krishna, accepted by Krishna. And when Krishna feels, I cannot, I will not live without this person. I'm taking this person. Then he takes you back home.